Today's program was previously recorded. You're listening to the Ray Buck Law Firm Radio Hour on WPSL 1590. Now back to your host, Attorney Michael Ray Buck.
Welcome back. This is Attorney Michael Ray Buck. You're listening to the Law Firm Ray Buck Law Firm Radio Hour on AM 1590 WPSL. If you have questions about a family law or personal injury matter, call me for a free consultation at 772-600-8166. Email me at michael@raybucklawfirm.com, and Raybuck is spelled R-E-B-U-C-K. Visit our website, www.thefamilylawattorney.net. Email me there as well, or you can find our leaks on Facebook and YouTube. We're talking about name change in Florida, and I want to just expound on a follow-up issue with respect to that regarding children's issues and a name change that's relevant to getting children's names changed to a party's former name. This would be an example of a wife spouse who has changed her name to her former name and now wants her children to have that name. So let's talk a little bit about that because it's actually a relevant subject to what we've been talking about today. Many courts have traditionally held that the father of a child has the right to insist that the child continue to use the father's last name as long as the father continues to fulfill his duties as a parent. Well, that's pretty innocuous language or somewhat rudimentary language, and although this traditional rule is apparently still used by many courts, some jurisdictions are changing the way they approach this issue. Florida certainly has a much different way of approaching the issue. Florida does not adhere to issues like gender when determining things like the best interest of the child. Under current laws and trends, a court may order a child's name to be changed to the mother's maiden or former name in a situation where it's clear that doing so is in the best interest of the child. To do that, courts are going to look at a number of factors when making this decision, and things would be that like that would include the age of the child, the strength of the mother-child relationship or the nature of that relationship, how long the child has used the father's name, any potential negative impacts that the child may suffer if the name change was ordered, and any benefits to changing the name. I guess in that situation, one sub-factor would be whether the mother remarries. Courts will need to balance those factors against the depth of the father-child relationship. In the end, what it really comes down to with respect to that question is what's in the best interest of the child. The court's not going to get caught up in semantics or preferences other than to address a child's best interest based upon the facts and information that's provided by the parties. And I'll caveat to all of this and to our discussion generally regarding name changes. Even if a party is successful in getting a court order that changes the children's name to a person's own maiden name or former name, you cannot change the legal relationship that exists between the father and the children. A lot of times these subtextual issues get tied up in things as simple or otherwise innocuous as a name change. A name change for some people is extremely important. In fact, I would say in most cases it's extremely important. No one goes to the trouble of spending the money and the time for getting a name change if it's not important to them. It's a very personal and subjective issue. So the issues like, okay, well, how does this affect the relationship between the other party and my children? That is inexorably tied to this type of proceeding in a person's mind. And so it can become a factor or become part of the process. And changing names is not going to change any rights or responsibilities of either parent when it comes to visitation, child support, or even things like intestacy or inheritance rights. These changes will only come about if apparent responsibility is changed by a court order. And now we're talking about things like modifying a time-sharing agreement or a parenting plan, or, of course, in the situation where a child is adopted by a step-parent. And finally, if a parent is planning on getting remarried and the new spouse is going to adopt the child through step-parent adoption, part of that adoption process can be a name change for the child. So that's pretty much how I wanted to summarize name change. Obviously, if you have questions regarding a name change or something related to that, please give me a call at the office. We're going to move on to a little bit different direction here. I wanted to address a question regarding change of venue, completely unrelated to what we were just speaking of earlier. So let's talk a little bit about what is venue. It's a legal term that basically determines in the case of a divorce. Let me just qualify this. We're talking about family law issues today. So for purposes of our venue discussion, we'll be talking about family slash divorce issues. And venue in a divorce case determines where a divorce action is filed. The Florida statute that's relevant here is 47.011. And a divorce action can be brought wherever a respondent, a party who to be served, lives, or where the parties last lived as a married couple. In cases where the children live in one county because a parent moved there after separation, the case can still be filed in the original county where the parties last lived as a married couple. The respondent in that situation might move for a change of venue, but it's at the court's discretion after testimony whether to move venue in that scenario. The significance of this might be sort of out there, but it really starts to come clear when you focus on the issue, because venue is actually a very important aspect of the procedural process in Florida and in other jurisdictions. Venue might not be as important to the parties if one party lives like in an adjacent county. Here, St. Lucie and Martin are sort of like sister counties almost. Mm-hmm. And I live in Martin County, and it's very simple for me even to come all the way up here to Fort Pierce. It's a 25-minute drive. Something like that might not be a big deal. But if the parties live in different areas of the state, which is also very common, a party might argue for venue in his or her county because of the cost of litigation. For example, if you retain, say, a Bartow, Florida county attorney, Polk County, but the venue of your case is in Dade or, say, even Martin or Palm Beach County, your attorney is going to charge for travel costs to attend the hearing or hearings in those counties. Unless the attorney can talk the court into letting him or her appear by telephone. Now, some judges simply, as a matter of discretion, do not allow telephone hearings. But even in situations where they do, judges are going to have certain things that are required that all parties attend. And the judge ultimately has that call. And if a judge orders as part of an order for hearing that the parties be present, they have to be present. The phone option is not available. So, when venue becomes an issue in a family case, venue allows the courts to simply rule fairly as to where an action should be brought. And there are very particular statutes and rules with respect to these types of issues. If the parties live far apart without venue laws, venue is going to be a bone of contention. And you can certainly count on that becoming part of the motion practice in situations where there's attorneys on both sides and venue is an issue. Neither party is going to want the expense of litigating a divorce action on the other side of the state, if it's at all possible.
Is it automatically going to happen in the county where the person filed?
No, it's not automatically going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen where they lived together last.
I actually may have missed the last part of that question. What's going to happen is they're going to file somewhere. Mm-hmm. They're going to file in a county. It may not be the appropriate county, and frankly, if nobody argues about that issue. Say the parties live in two separate counties, mm-hmm. and they file in a third county right here in Florida. Let's just say, for example, one lives in Indian River and one lives in St. Lucie, and for some reason, maybe work or something, they file in Martin. If nobody says anything about that, it's probably going to go through. It'll probably be processed, and if the parties don't have an issue with respect to venue, Martin County will probably ultimately hear that case and resolve it. So I guess the question really comes down to wherever they file, venue could then thereafter become an issue if one of the parties is unhappy with the location. Yeah, and it's not always tethered to things like it's inconvenient for me. There could be other reasons that a party feels that venue is not proper. I'll cover those in just a moment. But you've heard of like situations where a person is viewed as despicable or odious among the public. Situations like that might be a reason for a change of mm-hmm. venue, even though mm-hmm. it might have otherwise been proper.
Sure, I have to live in this town.
Yeah, exactly.
And
right.
people
That's
might
right.
be mad at me.
Yeah. So venue is what allows the courts to rule fairly as to where an action should be brought. If the parties live far apart without venue laws, it's going to be a bone of contention. The venue law basically keeps parties from fighting over where a divorce action should be filed. Now, time frame.
You give them one more thing to fight about.
Well, it's part of the process. Yeah. That's right. And the bottom line is, if you want to get right down to it, there are many issues that you can make a part of motion practice, and venue is certainly one of them. It becomes a critical issue with especially with things like expense. Regarding the time frame, there's a time frame element to when you can address a venue change. A party may request a change of venue because he or she thinks that they're not going to receive a fair trial in the proper venue because of the person requesting that change. Like we said, there's a despicable or odious element to it. It's rare in divorce cases because it's a judge that hears a case, not a jury. It's one,
right.
And the judge
mm-hmm.
is not going to be impartial a judge is going to be impartial with irrespective of those types of issues, because they're trained to do that, and that's not an issue. But nonetheless, in a situation where you've got a public figure as a client, a public figure could have issues even in divorce cases. And so the bottom line is, even though we're only dealing with judges with respect to this issue, family law case, a public figure could move for a venue change under certain circumstances. And if that's the case, they typically have to motion for that change of venue within 10 days after the filing of the divorce, unless there's good cause for why there was a delay. We've got Paul on the line. Paul's got a question. Good morning, Paul. How can I help you?
Good morning. Question on power of attorney.
Yes, sir.
Bring up a few different subjects for you.
All right.
Mom is, it's a 40-year-old adult, mentally challenged, and she's been his primary caregiver since birth, but going into living on his own, he's pretty capable, but as far as money and medical and stuff goes, probably needs to have something set up. She never did get guardianship because she was always his guardian, and it was never brought up or questioned. But now at this stage in his life, it's probably a good idea to get something in place as far as his controlling his money, you know, and not having anybody take advantage of him that way.
Well, Paul,
Can that be done with pretty much a simple power of attorney?
Yes. It sounds like in your circumstance, a power of attorney would be appropriate. And Paul, just so that you know, I will handle those on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in contacting me after the show or emailing me, you've got my phone number and email. Again, my phone number is 772-600-8166. And it does sound like it's a fairly simple matter of putting that power of attorney together. We would need to put the particulars in place, but given that information that you provided, it does sound that that would be appropriate and it would be something that would be relatively simple to do. Okay. We have been talking about time frame for venue, and the change of venue statute has several features written into it that make it easier for parties to get a fair trial, to make it easier for the parties or to make it easier for witnesses to testify on behalf of the parties. If the proper venue is a hardship on the parties because both parties moved after separation and live in different counties, remember we're talking about a divorce situation here, then in that circumstance, either party can apply for a change of venue to an appropriate court with jurisdiction. This allows the parties to stipulate to a different venue if both parties believe it is in their best interest to move venue. If after a change of venue, the court determines that it's not in the interest of one or both parties, then by the statute, the court's going to change that venue back to the original venue for, some would say, the convenience of the parties. Another feature of the venue statute is that testimony of witnesses can be taken by alternative methods, such as telephone or video appearance. This, again, would be discretionary for the judge. But in the end, if a judge requires the presence of all parties at a hearing, that's going to be what ultimately happens. And then the issue of misconception regarding jurisdiction and venue. Attorneys get caught up on this more often than you would otherwise think. People often confuse jurisdiction and venue, so it would be important to point out the differences right here. Venue means location, where an action is going to be brought, where it's going to be heard. Jurisdiction is a little bit different in speaking sort of holistically here. Jurisdiction basically means that the court has the authority to hear a certain case, such as a divorce case. And unless the parties agree to change venue, the court cannot order a change of venue without hearing testimony unless it's clear that the case was originally filed in the wrong venue. Now, depending on local rules, even if it's clear that the case was filed in the wrong venue, the court might still require testimony as to the change of venue. So jurisdiction has to do with the authority of a court. Florida, just to give you a brief primer on how this works, Florida's got 67 counties. Each of them have their own county court. But there are 20 circuit courts in the state of Florida, which is then each of them are basically comprised of different county courts. Here in the 19th Judicial Circuit, our circuit is comprised of Indian River, St. Lucie, Okeechobee, and Martin counties. And cases for unified family court or for family court are all under the auspices and jurisdiction of circuit court. Then, of course, you've got appeals courts in Florida. There are five of those called district courts of appeal. And, of course, the Supreme Court, which watches over everybody up in Tallahassee. So venue is actually the place, the location where a case is going to be brought, where it's going to be heard, where it's going to be decided. The jurisdiction within that court is relevant to its authority to actually hear a case. An example of this is you would not bring a divorce case in county court. You wouldn't take it to the Supreme Court or an appeals court. The jurisdiction of the original jurisdiction of a family court case is circuit court. We're going to take a brief break here, and we'll be right back to finish up on venue.
Treasure Coast Crime Stoppers works because of good tips, and good tips equal dollars and safer communities. Remember, we are available 24 hours a day, and you remain unknown and untouchable. Good tips give names, locations, and descriptions of the suspects. Good tips give the suspects race, date of birth, sex, weight, and height, plus the descriptions of tattoos, if any. Good tips also give the jurisdiction where the suspect is wanted. Make of car and license plate. Good tips equal dollars. 1-800-273-TIPS. That's 1-800-273-TIPS. Treasure Coast Crime Stoppers works for you. That's 1-800-273-TIPS. Funded by the Office of Florida's Attorney General.
You're listening to the Ray Buck Law Firm Radio Hour on WPSL 1590. Now back to your host, Attorney Michael Raybuck.
Welcome back. This is Attorney Michael Raybuck. And if you've got questions about family law or personal injury, call me for a free consultation at 772-600-8166. Email me at michael@raybucklawfirm.com or visit our website at www.thefamilylawattorney.net. We're talking about change of venue, and that concept has the potential to significantly affect the outcome of a divorce case. If venue is changed through application of the court because one of the parties does not agree, it can affect that party's ability to attend hearings. Party's appearance is required at most hearings in divorce court in Florida, and because the rulings at these hearings can significantly change the way one or both parties ultimately live their lives during and after the divorce process. If one of the parties cannot afford to attend a hearing, he or she may not be able to testify as to her side of the claims of the petition, may not be able to attend a mandatory appearance hearing, and what will ultimately happen in situations where the judge has ordered mandatory appearance is the party or parties are going to incur sanctions by the court, and those sanctions can include dismissal of claims, dismissal of elimination of defenses, a number of things, including attorney's fees, which could be sanctions, which ultimately hurt the party's case and can certainly make their case have limitations that would not otherwise have. But that's basically the idea behind venue. It is the location where the party will bring an action, where the parties will hear an action, and more or less summarizes what we were talking about with respect to venue and change of venue issues today. Now, I had intended on discussing premarital agreements, prenups, as what's regularly.
You may need a whole show for that.
I'm going to need a whole show for that. There is no way we're going to get through a whole hour of talking about prenups, but I am going to begin to interject on that. And I think what we'll do is expound upon this on a later show. But I do want to talk about prenups a little bit. We've got a few minutes left, so why don't we go ahead and get started on that. The statute for prenuptial agreements is codified in Section 61079, and this particular section is also cited as the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act. This particular section of 61, Statute 61, applies only to proceedings under the family law rules of procedure and not to other provisions of the Florida statutes. So things like probate, other things not related to family law, these rules would not apply in those situations. Sticking strictly with family law type issues. And a premarital agreement is essentially, it's an agreement that's between a prospective spouses made in contemplation of marriage and to be effective upon marriage. Property, which is almost always the subject of a prenup or a premarital agreement, is something that basically includes but is not limited to. There's that phrase that you hear attorneys say. The property includes but
it's
is not
gray
limited
area,
to.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. And property is going to be a lot of things. It's going to be an interest, a present or future interest, a legal or equitable interest, a vested or contingent interest. Basically, anything that exists or may exist or contingently exists in real or personal property, and that includes tangible or intangible property. And that would include things like retirement, passive or active income and earnings. Things like retirement are on the table as things that people can agree to as part of creating a prenuptial agreement. The agreement has to be in writing and has to be signed by both parties. And it's enforceable without the concept of consideration, as we know it in contract law. Consideration in this case is basically the marriage itself. Once the parties marry, that effectively creates the contract of the prenuptial agreement. I'm actually going to call it premarital agreement because that's the proper term in Florida, although it's impossible not to think of it as a prenup because everybody uses that term. Now, the parties to a premarital agreement, they're going to be able to contract about a lot of things. I'm going to go over that list of things briefly, and then you'll quickly realize there's really nothing they can't contract to as long as it's not illegal. But typically, in a premarital agreement, you'll see things like rights and obligations regarding property, personal, whatever, that parties have acquired before they were married, that they have now, or that they may acquire later. All of those things are typically on the table, as well as things like the right to buy, sell, transfer, abandon, lease or consume interests in mortgages, encumbrances, not only assets, but debts and liabilities as well. Those things will be addressed as part of a prenuptial agreement. The disposition of property upon separation. See, the anticipation of separation is written right in the contract, as well as marital dissolution or death or the occurrence or non-occurrence of any of those events. The parties can make that part of their agreement when they're at the outset.
Could it include the language like, if we decide to split, you're not going to bother me, we're just going to do this thing? We're going to just, you know,
absolutely.
There won't be, okay.
Absolutely.
You can dictate the
at the outset.
Virtual divorce?
That's correct.
Before
that's
you even get married?
It. Yeah. Okay. This is in anticipation of what may happen. And if it
if
does, we're just going to go ahead
wrong.
And say this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, and you're not going to fight it.
That's right. We're going to have it in writing that this is how it's going to be. I mean, other things that they can contract at that time would include how to handle the establishment, modification, or elimination of spousal support. Alimony can be dealt with at the outset. And this has really specific application. I mean, every case is different. People come to marriages where they're already sort of set in what they want and what they have. And they just don't want to mess with that in the event that there's a contingent situation whereby the marriage runs its course. Or perhaps one spouse dies. They want to know at the outset how that's going to be handled. Everybody's going to be taken care of. Other factors include that they can address things like ownership rights in and disposition of death benefits from life insurance policies, for example, as well as the choice of law governing the construction of these agreements in the first place. Which state is going to, for example, have jurisdiction if this has to be addressed. And then really any other matter, including personal rights and obligations, it's not in violation of any public policy of the state or any laws that could impose a criminal penalty. So you can basically contract for just about anything.
Wow.
Is the bottom line. One caveat is that the rights of a child to support may not be adversely affected by a premarital agreement. So you're not going to address child support.
Now, what if you have children from another marriage and this will be a second marriage? Can you include anything on the children then? Because that's...
It's a good question. And the way you couched it, I would have to say yes because you said, can you? And yes, children could become a part of a prenuptial agreement in certain circumstances. However, ultimately, between children or four children of the spouses, if any, those issues would not be addressed by prenup. They would have to be dealt with as part of the normal child support establishment process. Now, the effect of marriage is that a premarital agreement becomes effective upon marriage of the parties. Just to give the listeners a brief syllabus on contract law, this is essentially a contract situation. And a valid contract, as many of you probably know, consists of an offer, acceptance, and consideration without any legal defense to formation of the contract. Consideration in this instance is the marriage itself. So the consideration is basically the purpose for the contract to begin with. So in the case of a prenup, obviously the purpose of the contract is we're getting married.
But technically I can come see you and go, you know, I'm going to need this prenup. I haven't met anybody yet. Mm-hmm. But when I do, these are going to be the rules.
Can you do that? Absolutely.
I can just carry that around with me until I find the right guy.
Right. You can put me on retainer to handle something like that for you, Veronica. I'd be glad to draft that up. I know we're coming down to the end here. Let's talk about real briefly enforcement. A marital agreement is not enforceable in an action proceeding under the family law rules if the party against whom enforcement is sought proves a number of things. Real quickly, those three things would be that the party did not execute the agreement voluntarily, that the agreement was the product of fraud, duress, or coercion, or that the agreement was unconscionable when it was executed. And before execution of the agreement, that party was not, for example, provided a fair and reasonable disclosure of the property, the financial obligations, the financial affidavit was not properly filled out. Those types of things might invalidate a prenuptial agreement. And I see that we are just about at the end. Thanks. All right. Well, thanks again for...
You wanted to go ahead and give your contact information again real quick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real quickly. To discuss these or any other issues regarding family matters or personal injury questions, contact me at my office at 772-600-8166. My office is located at 1025 Southwest Martin Downs Boulevard in Palm City. This is attorney Michael Raybuck. My law firm is Michael Todd Raybuck, PA. You may find us on the web at www.thefamilylawattorney.net. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a great weekend.
CBS News is next on WPSL Port St. Lucie, the talk of the Treasure Coast, a service of Port St. Lucie broadcasters.